It feels like we have not seen each other in a while.
Like a really long time.
It feels like we have not recorded together in a while or put out an episode in a while. I mean, it's
like, yeah.
It's been 3 weeks since we recorded last.
Oh my gosh.
So it has been a while.
Wow. You know, because
the last time, so I'm checking my calendar, and the last time we recorded was on January 19th for the episode on the 1st. It is now February 9th, which February is going so much faster than the 4 years that January took.
Like, holy cow, why is January always the longest month? There's a conspiracy all in itself that January is like a million weeks long.
I mean, after the January we just had, I'm definitely inclined to agree with that, because it's just, agreed. This is the longest one we've ever had. It just didn't feel like it was ever going to stop. It felt like by the time it was over, it felt like it was like January 903rd.
I still don't feel like it's over. Like,
I don't.
It's just, it just keeps dragging on. But now it's February, and I'm a couple
9th.
Weeks away from my birthday. I'm very excited about that.
Yes, that's exciting.
Because it's my little holiday. And then
the best day of the year is this Saturday, which is the day this podcast comes out. But it's not the best day of the year because the podcast comes out. It is the best day of the year because all the really good Valentine's Day chocolate goes 50% off at Target.
So true.
And it is my
so
favorite
true.
Day of the year.
And that applies to everyone. You have at it.
I go get so much discount chocolate and eat until I'm sick. And
oh my
it's
gosh.
The best day of the year.
That's so true. You have at that chocolate. You
yes.
get on it.
I've
That's
earned it.
Funny. Oh, man. Oh, so gosh. Yeah, you're right. It is almost Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, huh.
So all
wonder
you,
what Cupid's up to.
All you non-terminally single people, go do something nice for your significant others.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I will be eagerly awaiting for you not to do something nice for your significant others, which leaves more chocolate for me at Target.
It's so true. more chocolate for Sammy.
More
That's
chocolate
funny.
For us single folks. So.
All right. So, hey, are we ready to talk some conspiracies and cryptids?
Yes, I'm ready to stop talking about how sad it is that I have to, celebrate Valentine's Day by myself
Someone
with lots of chocolate.
Someone date Sammy. He's
Take
amazing.
One for
He's
the
a wonderful,
team.
Wonderful man.
Okay.
Go in, and then you guys can eat discount chocolate together.
I mean, no, that takes away my chocolate. Just give me your chocolate. Give me your share of the chocolate.
Oh, man. He shares. He's better than this. You're not selling yourself very well.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. Anyway, let's shake that penny. I think it is my turn to pick.
I think you're right.
So.
Even if we're wrong, then I think you're right.
Well.
Let's do it.
I'm going to pick heads.
It's heads.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay.
You go
All right.
for it.
Cool. Because I
take it away.
I think you went first. Yeah, you did go first last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got a really good one. I'm super excited about this. I actually changed my topic because I seem to do that a lot. At least it seems like I do that with the conspiracies, because I guess I tend to think that some conspiracies are like a big deal. And then when I start to look into them, I'm like, I can't even make like a page out of this.
I know, right? See where I struggled?
Right. Yeah. So like originally I was going to talk about Black Pope, which I'd seen on like conspiracy theory memes and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, that sounds super interesting. So I'm going to look into it. But like, the more research I did, the more I was like, how is this a conspiracy? The Black Pope is a real thing that's acknowledged. And I couldn't really find anything about it that was conspiracy-like, or at least nothing that made sense to me, but I'm not clever. So it might be a big conspiracy and I'm just sleeping on it because I don't understand it. So instead, I'm going to talk about a conspiracy steeped in almost 1,000 years of history. Because once again, you know how much Sammy loves his history.
Mm-hmm.
So this order of knights has sparked so many conspiracies that they have been featured in novels, movies, and video games like The Da Vinci Code, National Treasure, and Assassin's Creed.
Ooh.
So I'm talking about the Knights Templar.
Cool. Oh, fun. This will be fun.
Yes. So get out your history books, turn to page 394, and get ready to zone out while I drone on for, you know, a full 30 minutes about the history of what I find fascinating.
So. This will be fun, guys. Yay.
Okay, so we're starting off with what it is, because like I said, I start out with the history. That's my shtick. So the Knights Templar, also known as the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon, were a Catholic military order formed in 1119 and were officially around until 1312 when they were disbanded by Pope Clement V. So they were a real military order. The Knights were a unit during the Crusades, and they were one of the most financially supported charities of the time, going so far as to even create early forms of banking. Some people credit them with creating flat coins and currency instead of ingots of gold and stuff like that.
Hey, thanks.
Right? They were notable for being clad in white garments with a bright red cross on them, which is probably what most of us think of when we think of like the Crusaders, you mm-hmm. know, like a white tunic with like a big red mm-hmm. cross on it. And that's because of them. So at the height of their crusading, the Knights Templar had around 20,000 individual members, which that's a lot of people for the time.
Yeah.
And their headquarters were actually at Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So basically, the reason their headquarters was at Temple Mount in Jerusalem is because the Knights Templar, these specific crusaders, were known for driving the Muslims out of Jerusalem at the time, you know, because that was the holy lands for Christian faith. So they drove the Muslims out and took it back so that, you know, Christians could take pilgrimages to the Holy Land.
Hmm.
So that's what they were known for. So, yeah, their headquarters was at Temple Mount in Jerusalem. However, they did lose control of the Holy Land once again back to the Muslims, and the Templars began to lose their funding after that, just because, you know, hey, you didn't do a good job of your job, I guess. So
you didn't defend my honor. You're not worth it.
Right. So it was around this time, though, that a lot of rumors began to spread, because the Templars were a very secret society. And a lot of they had like initiation ceremonies that nobody knew anything about. So there were a lot of conspiracies about those ceremonies, which I'll get into in a little bit. So these rumors, like I said, were kind of the birthplace of the modern conspiracy theories. And they spread distrust like everywhere that, you know, they were known, to include France, where King Philip IV of France used that distrust in the order to his advantage. See, at the time, King Philip IV was deeply indebted to the Templars. You know, he'd run up like a lot of credit with them, put a lot of stuff on his tab. And he was desperately looking for a way to get out of having to pay up.
Hmm.
So, you know, he ran up his Templar tab and it was, you know, he owed them a lot of money. So in 1307, he had many of the French members of the Templars rounded up, tortured into giving false testimonies of heresy, and then had them burned at the stake.
Whoa.
And then this led to the official disbanding of the order in 1312 by Pope Clement V, who was under the pressure of King Philip IV, which in turn erased his debt to the Templars. So that's one way to get what you want. But so he tortured and killed a bunch of them in like 1307 to 1309. And then Pope Clement V, was it? No, Pope Clement V didn't disband them in 1312. Some other pope did, but he was the one that was overseeing the burning at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're getting into the conspiracy. So that's all the history I'm going to talk about, at least mm-hmm. the factual history. So like I've said, Templars have been around since 1119, a little over 1,000 years ago, right? almost 900 yeah. years ago.
Yeah.
Almost 1,000 years ago. So obviously over that much time, conspiracies are just going to build up, especially about an order that was so secret.
Absolutely.
So
we to start conspiracies about things that happened an hour ago.
I mean, yeah, Epstein didn't kill himself. there are different kinds of conspiracies with other underarching conspiracies under them. So one of the first ones I'm going to talk about is how they survived to modern times, because there are a lot of people that claim that they didn't catch them all and that once they disbanded, they made it to modern times. Now, there is some evidence that some Templars did survive, you know, and because they didn't actually round up all 20,000 Templars and kill them all.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I
know that at one point they exonerated a bunch of them and let them kind of go off and live in peace, but they did round up quite a few. So one way that is claimed of how they survived is the Freemasons, or you know, like the Masonic Lodge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and as with most conspiracy theories, these guys are no different of having ties with the Freemasons. So now, while it is fact that the Freemasons currently do base some of their rituals and their structure on the Knights Templar, that didn't start until the 18th century. And anything beyond that is kind of speculation and scrutiny, with the Masons themselves claiming they have no official historical connection to the original Templars. So,
Of course they would. That's what they would say.
I mean, yeah, no, that's what I was thinking. But, you know, but they claim that they don't. And, you know, as far as we can tell, historically speaking, they didn't start structuring themselves about the Knights Templar until, you know, the 18th century. So according to legends, though, many of the Templars fled to Scotland to escape the persecution of the Catholic Church. And that's where they found a group of stonemasons, which is where the Freemasons actually have their origin, is in stonemasonry, which is... They were basically like the medieval version of a union. You know, they kind of protected each other from like being mistreated or hired under false pretenses or not getting the money that they deserved for their work. So, and a lot of their symbols are stonemason tools.
Hmm.
So they became members of this group and used common builders' tools as symbolism in order to hide their secret order of the Templars. And as such, they began to open their membership and take in more men with a higher calling to be part of their organization and continue to pass the knowledge on through the generations. One supposed example of a Templar Masonic chapel is the Roslyn Chapel in Scotland that was owned by the Earls of Roslyn and were well-documented Freemasons.
Ooh.
Interesting, right?
Uh-huh. So, there's a connection.
Yeah. So I thought that one was really interesting. But like I said, the Freemasons kind of pop up in just about every conspiracy theory.
All of them.
I mean, they're a secretive society that have been around for a long time. They've been around since the 1300s, which ironically is when the Templars were disbanded. You know, so it's like you can kind of see where you could draw a connection with that. Another conspiracy is that the Templars were the first discoverers of the New World. This is a more recent conspiracy that actually dates back to a book from 1982 called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail by Michael Bygent. Michael Bygent, Richard Lay, and Henry Lincoln. And they stated that some of the Templars took three of their boats and using old Viking trading routes, found their way to North America and settled down before Columbus even, quote unquote, discovered America.
We always want to make our origin less horrible than it was.
Yes, because, you know, Columbus was bad. Also, he did not discover North America. He discovered, like, the Caribbean islands.
Exactly. Come on.
But.
Like, our origins are terrible. Let's accept it and move past it.
Right. But some theorists point towards the Westford Knight and the Newport Tower as proof that there was, in fact, pre-Columbian transoceanic travel. So the Westford Knight is the name given to a pattern found on a glacial boulder in Massachusetts that's either carved or natural or a combination of both. And it's claimed that it has the appearance of a medieval knight holding a sword and shield, which I looked at all sorts of pictures of this thing, and were it not for internet users drawing on it where the knight was supposed to be or circling it with a red circle, I couldn't see it.
Oh,
like,
no.
I could barely see the hilt of the sword, let alone an entire knight. So I have a picture that I will show you real quick.
Oh, please do.
So, but yeah, and I'll be posting this on, you know, the social media, the Facebook, the Grams, stuff like that. But this is the Westford Knight.
Oh, okay.
You can kind of see a sword hilt here, but it's supposed to be like a knight holding the sword in front of him.
Oh,
I don't see any of that, but that's just me.
Uh-huh.
I have another picture, so I'm just going to leave it on screen share. Okay. This is the Newport Tower. It's a round stone tower located in Newport, Rhode Island. And it's what is left of a windmill that was built in the 17th century, which was the 1600s, right? Yes. 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 I still have problems with that. 1600s.
Yeah.
But some conspiracy theorists believe that it actually predates Columbus. However, carbon dating has proved that this is not true. At all. Like,
at all.
Not in the slightest. So those are the theories of where they went. Now we're going to get into the theories of what they guarded. The Knights Templar were, since they had their headquarters at Temple Mount, which is the holy ground, the holy land, blah, blah, blah. It is where, you know, everything originates. They supposedly got themselves in possession of many Christian relics and protected them through the centuries to this day, possibly. Oh. One relic is the notorious Holy Grail. This conspiracy theory also originated from that 1982 book, The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. And it's, you know, basically saying that the cup, well, so for those of you who don't know what the Holy Grail is, it is, according to Christian religion and mythology, it's the cup that was used by Jesus and his disciples during the Last Supper, the night prior to Jesus's crucifixion. And supposedly it has all sorts of mystical powers and can heal any sort of ailments and even possibly grant eternal life, according to mythology.
Often compared to the uterus.
Yes. Yes, it is actually, weirdly enough. So according to theories, though, the Grail, along with other religious relics, were held at, like, within the Temple Mount, where they had their headquarters, and they took them with them when they fled. Some people theorize that the Grail is located underneath, like, buried underneath the Roslyn Chapel in Scotland, and some others claim that it was actually taken to Spain, because a lot of the Knights Templar actually ended up in Portugal, which was founded by the Knights Templar. That's where they went. I couldn't remember, but talking about it, it popped back up. So yeah, the Knights Templar actually founded the country of Portugal.
They were
like basically given safe haven there, you know, that they were allowed to go there and live out their days. And that was where the actual order of the Knights Templar continued on. And they actually still have some roots to this day in the original Knights. So
interesting.
Another relic that they're claimed to have had is the Ark of the Covenant. Once again, to give a description of what it was to people who may not know, according to the Bible, the Ark of the Ark of the Covenant was a gold-covered wooden chest with a lid cover. And inside it, it supposedly had the two stone tablets of the Ten Commandments. It had Moses's brother Aaron's staff, which had blossomed and stayed in eternal blossom, and two jars filled with manna, which was a flaky substance that fell from the sky for the Israelites to eat while they were in the desert for 40 years. So they kept two jars of manna to remind them of the blessing that God gave them when they were stranded in the desert. And that's what's supposedly in the Ark of the Covenant. And this was, you know, a very important part of the Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. So this theory originated in a 1992 book by Graham Hancock called The Sign and the Seal. Graham theorized that the Templars discovered the secrets of the builders of Solomon's Temple and therein found that the Ark had been removed from the original temple upon its destruction and moved to Ethiopia. And then they then traveled to Ethiopia, retrieved the Ark, built the Church of St. George, and kept it there. However, that church was not, in fact, built by the Templars, so go figure.
Oh, well.
Well.
They contracted that one out.
Yeah. So, but you know, this is a 1992 theory. A lot, some of the theories are way back there, but some of them are very recent. Mm-hmm. The last relic that they supposedly had in their possession was the Shroud of Turin. Mm. For those of you who don't know, the Shroud of Turin is a length of linen cloth bearing the negative image of a man, which some believe to be Jesus Christ, and that this was his burial shroud after crucifixion.
Oh.
Which I'm Ooh. Not going to lie. You have to like you can kind of see it like on the main shroud, but like a lot of times when it's shown online or on TV, they'll actually put the negative up there. And you see like the white negative face. Mm-hmm. This image gave me nightmares as a kid. Ooh. It was super creepy looking, you know, because it looks like a dead body's face. Nah. But I mean, the whole shroud itself is about the lengths of like 2.5 people. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, it covered the whole body and you can see the outline of a man from head to foot. Wow. And, you know, it's like basically it looks like, you know, sun was on it or dust got on it and it captured that person's face mm-hmm. in the cloth, mm-hmm. Like a stain. So I have pictures. I'll show them to you in a second here. The shroud was first displayed in 1357 by the widow of a man named Geoffrey of Charny, who some claimed was the same Geoffrey de Charny, who was a Templar burned at the stake alongside a man named de Molay, who I'll talk about in a bit, who was a very famous Grand Master Templar.
Oh.
And this was considered evidence of the Templars owning religious relics and protecting them in secret. And then these theories were further expanded upon in 2009 when paleographer Barbara Fale, who worked in the Vatican secret archives, claimed that the shroud had been kept by the Templars after 1204 and also includes imprints of Jesus's death certificate, which were found on pottery at the time. So basically, she said that like the linen had draped onto the pottery that had Jesus's death certificate, and it also picked that up.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Wow.
A painting discovered in 1945 in Templecombe, England, appears to be a copy of the image found on the Shroud of Turin, which furthers the belief that the Templars had possession of the shroud due to the fact that Templecombe is one of the last remaining Templar-related sites in the area.
Hmm.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I am going to show you what the Shroud of Turin looks like. So this is the shroud in its entirety, okay. And there is the outline of the person.
Oh, I see. I see.
And then I've got the zoomed in pictures of the face, which don't be too creeped out.
Ooh.
Kind of creepy looking, right?
Interesting. That is.
And a lot of people noted that, you know, some of the smears and stuff on it are right around the forehead where Jesus had the crown of thorns pressed down onto his forehead.
Interesting.
You know, so yeah, it's interesting. And like I said, as a kid, it creeped me out, like, because I saw it on some sort of documentary and the face is really creepy looking.
Of course.
But
and then they go all like, you know, Law and Order, you know, opening number and how it like would do like the negative.
Yes.
On
yeah. yeah, just like that.
On the Lincoln Memorial. And it's like super creepy.
Yes.
Or a courthouse.
Okay. So I have two more theories to discuss. One of them is known as de Molay's curse. As I mentioned before, de Molay was a Grandmaster Templar. Mm-hmm. And one theory states that upon his death of being burned at the stake, Jacques de Molay called out a curse upon Pope Clement V and King Philip IV of France, saying that they would meet him before God before the year was out as punishment for condemning him and all these other innocent men to death.
Because, oh, you remember, will rue the day, sir.
Right.
You will rue it.
Because remember, they were tortured into confessing. And
yeah.
a lot of them rescinded their confessions later, but mm-hmm. at that point it was too late.
Oh.
And back then, you know, the Catholic Church, you confess once, that's good enough.
Yep.
So let's burn them. So whether or not the curse was real, both Pope Clement V and King Philip IV did in fact die within a matter of months after de Molay's execution.
Wow.
And then it goes further. King Philip's sons all also ended up dying within a few more years, all at really young ages. And so he had nobody to take the throne. And this sudden vacuum of power ended up causing the Hundred Years' War, as the House of Capet, which was King Philip's house, was completely eradicated. And the remaining houses and factions in France vied for power over who should be king. So, which I found that super fascinating because the Hundred Years' War is my favorite historical war in history, mainly because I have like a weird historical obsession with Joan of Arc and how interesting she was. So, but anyway, so when I found that out during my research, I was like, oh my God, this ties into the Hundred Years' War. No way. So now, I mean, granted, it's probably inadvertent, you know, but it does have some sort of tie to it. So I thought it was cool. The last conspiracy that I'm going to talk about in depth and was made popular by the Da Vinci Code is the superstition that Friday the 13th, originates to the date that King Philip IV ordered the arrest of de Molay and all the other Templars. So, cause they were arrested on like Friday the 13th of like 1309 or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
So, and fiction and books like the Da Vinci Code have said that that's where the whole Friday the 13th being bad luck originates from.
The whole superstition. Wow.
Yeah. However, there isn't a lot of evidence to back this one up because, there really isn't any evidence that the superstition itself existed prior to the 19th century. So at least as far as we can tell, according to written documents, Friday the 13th didn't start being a thing until like the 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so there really isn't much proof saying that it came from the Templars, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah.
Other theories that, you know, I'm just going to touch on are that they practice witchcraft, you know, because, you know, As they do. They also supposedly worshipped Baphomet or Satan, because once again, blame Satanists.
You know,
that's what we do when we don't understand something. We blame the Satanists. Another one is that they worshipped John the Baptist instead of Jesus Christ, and that part of their initiation ritual was spitting on a crucifix.
Oh, wow.
And then another really out there one is that they worshipped a mummified severed head that either belonged to Baphomet, John the Baptist, or Jesus Christ himself, you know, which would completely eradicate all of Christians' beliefs that Jesus rose from the dead and went to heaven afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, so it, all of this, when, you know, these rumors were spreading, obviously that's part of the reason why the Catholic Church decided to arrest all of them, was because this sounds like heresy, you know, and, you know, even though they're just rumors, if we can torture them into confessing this, then we can definitely convict them of heresy with all of this stuff that I just mentioned.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. They're not going to get you one way. They'll get you the other.
They'll get you one of many different ways. So, so the Knights Templar, very real, very secretive order of the Crusaders, with, like I said, almost 1,000 years of mystery and conspiracy. A lot of it's probably just fantasy due to, you know, historical records of the time not being entirely accurate. So we never will know probably the entire truth. So maybe they were Satan worshipers who guarded the Holy Grail, or maybe they were just a military order doing their job. And the king at the time racked up his Templar tab and felt threatened. So, but my money's on the latter. I'll put my Templar tab on the latter. So, so that's the Knights Templar.
That's super interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, wow. I had so much fun researching that because I've heard of them for years. And then, like I said, finding out that they had ties to the Hundred Years' War just really, that like got me going.
That's funny. Yeah, so. I was actually just recently talking about Joan of Arc at work because we were talking about how people tend to discredit kids like Greta Thunberg and stuff, and like these kids that have these opinions, and it's like Joan of Arc was like 15.
Dude, I went on like a rant this afternoon with my dad on the phone about Joan of Arc, and she was an illiterate, completely uneducated farm girl from a peasant town in the countryside of France who couldn't have been more than 16 years old, who felt that she had a calling to go defend France. And because of her, because of this like 15, 16 year old girl, the entire tide of a 100-year-old war changed and France won because of this girl that had no military tactical training at all. You know, and she was eventually burned at the stake for, you know, witchcraft and for cross-dressing because she wore men's armor and all sorts of stuff. But she never Never once broke under the torture, never confessed to heresy. She maintained her innocence throughout and was eventually, you know, many, many, many years later, was exonerated by the church as being unfairly, you know, given an unfair trial and unfairly treated.
It's like, but, don't discount our kids.
She is just, she is my favorite. They're stronger than you think. She is my favorite historical figure. And, you know, if I could ever meet anybody from history and have 5 minutes to talk with them, it would be her. Mm-hmm. And it bothers me so much that, like, there just isn't more anything about her. I don't know why there's not more movies about her or books or video games or cartoons, because you want a strong, independent, powerful female. Joan of Arc is that female.
There you go. Know? There you and go. Like, get on it, guys. We need to make a video game about Joan of Arc.
I will get on this soapbox endlessly because I just love Joan of Arc so much. So if you guys haven't ever done research on Joan of Arc, look her up. She's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, go ahead and Google that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will talk about my cryptid. And so don't go anywhere.
I'm excited.
Hey, you know who remembers to bring headphones to work because they listen to us because they're awesome? Is our new Patreons.
Our new patrons.
Yes.
Yes.
We wanted to say just a welcome to Jordan, our new patron from Australia. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Jordan. And we appreciate you.
Also wanted to make sure we do our little shout out for Nathan and also Jason and Kate, who are our longest running patrons. So thank you guys. You guys are so awesome. And if you guys are listening, go ahead and head over there and go check us out. And we can't do this without your support. And we want to continue to do this because you guys are so supportive and we love talking your ear off. So
We also want to announce the winner of the giveaway that we kind of came up with spur of the moment last episode.
Yay!
We asked, like, what we shake our penny for our thoughts in. And our friend, well, not our friend, but like one of our listeners, I mean, you're all our friends, but one of our listeners named Emily messaged us on Facebook and said, you shake your penny in a shot glass from an underground tour you went on, which that is exactly true. We got our shot glass from the underground Sacramento tours, which if you are in and around Sacramento or going there on vacation, you should absolutely go take that tour. It was super interesting. So Emily, you have won.
Yay, Emily!
So if you're listening to this, just message us and we'll get like your contact information and we will send you out a little prize package. So
yay!
Thank you.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, hopefully we'll get to do more of these. And hey, if you guys head to our Patreon, we will be able to. So
yes,
go check that out. Oh, so you okay? So it has been 4 days,
we're
guys.
Back.
We took quite a break.
We took a long break.
I hope you guys. I hope it was worth it.
So as far as you guys are concerned, it's only been about like 2 minutes, maybe. But as far as we're concerned, we started this episode on Monday. It is Valentine's Day. So when you're if you're listening to this on the 15th, when it comes out, we were working on this last night.
Yes, just hours ago. So this is almost live, guys.
It's almost live. We had things come up and mishaps happen, but our break is over and we're back and we're ready to go. And my ears are sticky because I learned a new little trick on TikTok this week, which,
oh boy,
by the way, if you haven't gotten into TikTok, I am now on TikTok.
Sammy's on TikTok, guys.
And I'm obsessed.
Oh gosh.
I have another creative outlet for Sammy Rayner.
And then you bring this to me, the conspiracy theorist, and
I know.
And I'm going to tear you down
I know.
With all the conspiracies about, yes, I am. Yes, I don't download it. It's owned by a Chinese company
that's
selling your information just like
memes,
every other company
but
out
the
there.
The memes are just so funny. And it's like, I thought it was primarily children on TikTok. No, it's mainly depressed millennials, which is the perfect place for me. But anyway, so the reason my ears are sticky is because I found this TikTok video that taught you how to make your ears look like elf ears, make them pointed. And it basically is just you put eyelash glue on like the inside of like your upper ear and then just kind of pinch it together. And it dries that way and they make them look kind of pointy. And it's really cool. And I tried it out today and my ears are sticky because of it.
Interesting. Well, mine are natural. Have you ever seen my ears?
Yes, I have. Your ears are naturally pointing. I'm just trying to match you, Tess.
Exactly. Just weird. Oh, one of us is going to have to change.
Probably me, because mine's not natural. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But okay, so.
So are you ready to talk about your cryptid?
I am. Okay. I'm so excited about this because I got to delve even deeper on something that I already kind of knew a little bit about.
Okay.
So, yeah, because I'm human and made a boo-boo.
Made a boo-boo.
But
it's okay.
It's okay because this is the Band-Aid. So let's have some fun. All right. So when I was in college, they pulled a sneaky on me. They told me in high school that 2 years of a foreign language was required, but 3 was preferred. I, thinking I would do the bare minimum, enough to communicate here in California, but not enough to be fluent, was shocked to find out once I got to college why they said it was preferred. Mm-hmm. Because they don't tell you until you get there that if you didn't take 3 years in high school, you have to take another semester of it in college to get through your general ed.
Oh.
And then as soon as you graduate, they're going to get rid of that requirement. So it's just completely obsolete and it doesn't really matter. So great.
Because the rules are made up and the points don't matter. Just
higher
like
education.
Whose line is it anyway?
Exactly. Exactly. Ugh. But.
Okay.
Here I am back in Spanish class, but this time also taking salsa dancing lessons. So, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
And I do appreciate being able to communicate with my peers here in California.
True.
True.
I lost a lot of my Spanish because I took 2 years of Spanish in high school and I lost all of it. And then it was rusty to begin with. And then I lost it even more when I studied Chinese and then it was just gone. So I'm kudos to you for being able to speak Spanish because I can't.
Just muy poquito. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But we were asked to do a report, though, on something pertaining to Spanish, Hispanic or Latin culture. Mm-hmm. And so I took this class in the fall. So naturally, I picked today's topic, which I'm revisiting for this episode.
Nice.
We're going to talk about La Llorona.
Oh, I've heard about this. Isn't there a movie that just came out about that?
There is. There is. Actually, just finally, it's on HBO, guys. So if you want to go check it out.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Go have a nice little scare for me.
But listen to us first so that you know what you're getting yourself into.
So yeah, exactly. So you're prepared. So
yes.
You're not screaming at your television, although.
Or maybe so that you will be anyway.
We can't say we didn't warn you guys.
True.
And also I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm going to try to not say it like my Sharona for the rest of the episode.
La Llorona. Okay,
La
I had to.
La Llorona. That's terrible. Please don't hurt me. All right. So there are a lot of different versions of La Llorona's story as the story is told throughout Central America. And you're probably familiar with it, but we're going to start with Mexico's.
Okay.
A woman named Maria lived in a rural village there. She came from a poor family, but was known around town for her beauty and her warm disposition. One day, this rich guy shows up and he's like, I'm a wifer. And he does. So eventually they have 2 sons after they get married. And the husband starts traveling more often and is never found around his family. Mm-hmm. But when he is, she notices he pays special attention to the boys and pretty much ignores her completely.
Oh, no.
She realizes he's starting to fall out of love with her as she starts to age. Mm. One day, rich boy, itty bitty boy, shows up with a younger woman and bids his children farewell. And pretty much ghosts his wife.
Oh my
so
God.
She gets the ultimate revenge and ghosts him back to the extreme.
Oh, God.
So angry and hurt, she takes her children to the river and drowns them in a blind rage. And if you don't want them, I don't either, I guess. I don't understand the logic. But she immediately realizes what she did. Apparently, she doesn't understand the logic either.
Okay.
And she goes searching for her drowned kids, but the river had already taken them away.
Right.
A few days later, her ex-husband shows up and asks about the kids, and she starts weeping, telling him that she drowned him.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, he's furious and says that she couldn't ever be with him again until she found their children.
Oh, right. Because that's how that works.
Right, exactly. Until you find them.
I didn't love you already, but I'll never love you again unless you find our dead kids. Oh, okay. Let me go look for them real quick.
Yeah. then here's where it even gets even more spread out. The story departs here. Some say she died of grief. Right. Others say she threw herself into the water. Regardless, though, the villagers buried her. And the next night, the woman in white was spotted wailing for her children near a riverbank.
Right.
Some stories say she wasn't allowed into heaven because her children weren't with her. They'd already tipped off St. Peter, the heaven bouncer. And she's been cursed to wander the earth, kidnapping other people's kids and drowning them in an attempt to fool her way past the pearly gates. She's like, look at all these Benjamins. You could take it, your pick of any of one of them. They may be worth hundreds.
Oh my God. I'm not quite over the heaven, St. Peter, the heaven bouncer at this point. Oh, that's my favorite.
Just process.
Okay.
Let it all sink in.
Okay. All right. I'm ready. Keep going.
She's always heard weeping for her children, earning her the nickname. Mm-hmm. And they say if you hear her cries, you have to sprint the other direction. Don't investigate, or you're going to find the same fate as the kiddos, or at least have some very bad luck for a while.
Okay.
Parents often use her story as a way to discipline their kids and prevent them from staying out too late.
Right. Cautionary tales. Because so many cryptid stories, at least as far as I can surmise, are basically just cautionary tales that have kind of grown a life of their own.
Exactly. So, and they just blossom into, the human imagination just gets so
carried
creative.
Away as it does. Yep.
Exactly. So obviously she's pretty freaky looking if people fear her like this, mm-hmm. If she's been seen. Now, obviously I don't really have any pictures for you of this, this woman, because people don't tend to want to snap photos, but they hear her screams all the time.
Okay.
She goes by many names other than La Llorona, but they all boil down to one thing. She's a banshee-type crier.
Okay.
Like Sammy.
Right. I mean, But I mean, now we have talked about banshees before and said that they kind of sound like screech owls, which we've mentioned in a couple of cryptids at this point.
Exactly.
And screech owls sound terrifying. So if you want to know what that sounds like, go back to our banshee episode and you'll find the screech owl sound somewhere buried in that episode. So.
Exactly. So now that you're back, she's tall and thin with long flowing black hair and strikingly beautiful. That is until you get a really good look at her. Then it's like, no. People who claim to have seen her say she appears at night or in the late evening by rivers or lakes wearing a white gown with a veil. Between her unintelligible wails, she can also be heard screaming, "Ay, mis hijos," which translates to, "Oh, my children," or "Oh, my sons." So she's just...
She's really upset.
She's a mess, guys. She's a mess. And if that weren't freaky enough, she can also throw her voice. So if it sounds like her wails are very far away, she's probably right behind you.
Objects in sound are closer than they appear.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But you didn't hear it from me.
Okay. No, you heard it from somewhere probably closer.
Exactly. Way over here, or way over here, or over here. Maybe over here.
I might see if I can't make just that section in stereo and make it bounce back and forth.
Maybe.
I'll probably won't. I will try, but I'm not making promises. So if you get to this point in the episode and it didn't do that, it's not that I didn't try, it's that I failed.
We'll just give you a round of applause anyway. Everybody, guys, just give us just for a sec.
Snaps for Sammy.
Snaps for Sammy. So the story of La Llorona or other international versions can be traced back as far as actually Greek mythology.
Really? I didn't know that.
Exactly. This was totally new to me. So when Hera found out that Zeus was getting busy with Lamia, I mean.
And everybody else, because that's
he was digging it to everybody. All right, come on.
And everything.
Everything. So Hera demanded that the demonic demigoddess Lamia eat her children. And she's said to wander the earth for eternity, eating other people's children. Oh. So get your own Sour Patch Kids, lady. Oh, come on. Come on.
Oh my God. I feel like that's even worse. Like, it's not just that she drowned her children, but she had to eat them.
She had to consume them, and she was already a demonic demigoddess, so she wasn't exactly a spring chicken. But
still, okay. This is, okay. Yeah, this is out of control. I'm happy, but go ahead.
So this was also another, there was another version that also was kind of a little bit more closer to the origin story that we know today. Mm-hmm. But La Llorona is also sometimes referred to as La Malinche. And it's important to understand her story because she was a person that we actually have records of. Oh. She's a real woman. This story refers to a Nahua woman named Marina Malinson, who served as Hernan Cortez's interpreter, among other things, because she bore his first son. But she was really, really tight with Cortez. Mm-hmm. Cortez was a Spanish conquistador who led the expedition that caused the fall of the Aztec Empire and brought large portions of what we now like mainland Mexico under the rule of the King of Castile in the early 16th century. Mm-hmm. So she was way up in the courts, but she was one of 20 women that were gifted to the Spaniards by the natives of Tabasco in 1519. Mm. As I mentioned, she later gave birth to Cortez's son, Martin, who was considered one of the first mestizos, which are the European indigenous ancestry, the first individuals.
Right.
But he abandoned her to marry a Spanish woman, white men, right?
Of course, yeah.
Sending her into a fit of rage, you know, that Aztec pride.
Right, but I'm just still stuck on, you know, gifted these women, and it's just so disgusting. But
exactly. Like
if she killed him, I have no sympathy for him, but okay. Okay.
Well, there's no official record of her drowning or killing her son, but she caused quite a mess.
Okay.
And her story's actually pretty, like, she just woo all of, like, oh, woo.
She woo.
Woo.
Woo. Okay. She woo.
Made a mess.
Okay.
Woo. Her story is pretty polarizing, though, in Mexico, though, because her reputation is often altered according to changing social and political environments, especially after the Mexican Revolution, when she was portrayed in media as an evil or scheming temptress. Mm-hmm. So that she was trying to, like, break up the family rather than somebody who was victimized. Mm-hmm. But she's also interpreted in other forms as the quintessential victim or simply a symbolic mother of the new Mexican people.
Okay.
In fact, they actually tried to erect a statue of her in the Coyoacan in the outskirts of Mexico City in 1982, but they quickly took it down after students protested, saying she served as a reminder of the domination of outsiders through betrayal. So,
right, and I can kind of understand that.
Exactly. But visages and tales of weeping women actually permeate most modern Asian cultures, mostly European and indigenous American cultures, with a good reason. Mm-hmm. Most of them date back as far as recorded human history.
Right. I mean, white women in general are one of the most common forms of ghosts that are usually reported.
Exactly.
Not white women as in, like, Caucasian women, but women in white. Yes.
Yes. But in Brazil, you have the Dama Branca or Mujer de Branco. Also in Canada, there's a popular legend at Montmorency Falls near mm-hmm. Quebec about the spirit of a young Canadian woman whose fiance was killed while fighting with the British in the Battle of Beauport. Mm-hmm. The couple had allegedly agreed to meet at the top of the falls once the fighting stopped, but in her grief following his death in war, she pitched herself off of the falls into the raging waters below, wearing the wedding dress she never actually got to wear. Oh. So that's another wailing woman and you can run into right. these waterfalls. There's also in the Czech Republic, there's the ghost of Percha. She haunts the Rosenberg Castle. She was the daughter of an important Czech nobleman who married another nobleman, Jan of Liechtenstein. It wasn't a very happy marriage, and she frequently sent letters, 32 of them, in fact, that have been found, to her father and her brothers detailing how horrible her husband was. And apparently on his deathbed, though, her husband asked for her forgiveness for beating the hell out of her, you know, because that's the time to do it when, you know, you're about to just shuffle off this mortal coil.
Right.
But rather than accept his apology, because she was like, okay, thanks, bye. No, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. Don't forgive you. And he's like, hey, well, then you're cursed. And then he died. He just croaked. So she still haunts the buildings because of the curse, mm-hmm. according to this legend.
Right. Interesting.
Isn't
even like the Banshee, technically, doesn't she fall into the women in white sort of mythology, at least to an extent?
There is a version, yes, that, okay. that can go down that path.
Right.
There's also legends of the Weeping Women in Estonia, Hungary, Ireland, Malta, the Netherlands, the Philippines, Thailand, Eastern Russia, the UK, and here in the US.
Right.
I would talk about all of them, but holy cow, the script would never end.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, though, one version out of northern Pennsylvania called the Susan Screamer. This was kind of interesting.
Okay.
A viewer actually tipped us, or a listener tipped us off to this not too long ago. Some say this legend started sometime in the 1800s, and the story kind of goes, there's a bunch of different versions. It's kind of similar to the story I told last season, in that it's a poltergeist that is like a, you know, the hook-handed man at the end right. of the dark road and the claw on the, you know, the side of the car,
yes.
kind of.
Yep.
That kind of story.
Right.
But under the former Susquehanna Railroad Bridge, which crossed Susan Road, and also it's also known as the Black Ridge mm-hmm. or Black Bridge, but it's since been torn down. But under there reportedly lurks the Susan Screamer. Locals say the area was haunted by this woman who was left at the altar, and with a blood-curdling scream, she hung herself from the bridge. See right. what I mean?
Right.
Another version says she was a teen killed on prom night while trying to hitch a ride home wearing a white dress.
I've heard Again. That urban legend exactly. before. Yep.
Other than say the spirit isn't even human, they like they're just it's just some thing that's just out there that just screams.
Yeah.
But they say if you park near Susan Road, flash your brights, and honk five times, you'll hear an ungodly scream come from the woods beyond. They say it's the spirit of that woman, no matter how she died. But my money is on some poor neighbor that she just woke up with all that damn honking.
I mean, like, that's possible, too, because I would probably be pretty upset if I lived on a road that had teenagers constantly coming down in the middle of the night honking their horn. You know?
Exactly. I would be just like, ah, come on.
Or I'd be that old person that's just messing with the teenagers that are doing that too. So either
way. I see that. I see that. Oh, yeah. But some scholars have also pointed out some similarities between La Llorona and Cihuacotl of Aztec mythology, or the Eve of the Old World mythology. It's kind of the... Mm-hmm. A similar storyline. Cihuacotl translates to snake woman. She has a mixed reputation. She was a number of motherhood and fertility goddesses that were worshipped by the Aztec people.
Yeah.
The story goes that she helped Quetzalcoatl create the current race of humanity by grinding up bones from previous ages and mixing it with blood. Although she's sometimes depicted as a young woman, she's also described as a savage beast and an evil omen of war. Mm-hmm. So she's a little two-faced.
Okay.
She also appears in white and would walk around weeping and wailing. That's because she's the mother of Mixcoatl, whom she abandoned at the crossroads. The tradition here says that she often returns there to weep for her lost son, only to find a sacrificial knife there in his place.
Oh.
So this is like kind of another similar ancient story. She's also depicted as a skull-faced woman carrying the spears and shield of a warrior. That's because childbirth was compared to warfare, and women who died as a result were often honored as fallen warriors. Their spirits are described as the same kind of skeletal face, but they're thought to haunt crossroads at night to steal children.
Right.
One author, Ben Bradford, traced La Llorona's story back to a German tale dating back to about 1486. Apparently around the same time that La Llorona was first mentioned in Mexico, the story of the German Divasa Frau, or the White Lady, was starting to pop up all over the area. In fact, the origin story of the White Lady is nearly identical to that of La Llorona.
Okay, so it's just either the tale traversed to Europe, maybe. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah. It's entirely possible, you know, somebody on vacation.
Or it came to Mexico from Europe. I mean, if they're that similar, it's probably it came from one of the two places and just migrated. But I mean, it's not the, I don't know. It's not that far of a tale that's like out of the realm of possibility that it might have just happened to come up in two different places completely off of their own volition, too. I don't know.
Exactly. But also as with most conspiracies and cryptids, this one has some very real consequences.
Okay.
In 1986, a woman named Juana Lejia attempted to kill her 7 children by throwing them into the Buffalo Bayou in Houston, in Texas, that she was an alleged victim of domestic violence and was apparently trying to end her suffering.
Right.
So 2 of her children, unfortunately, did die. Right. But during an interview, she claimed she was La Llorona in the flesh.
Right.
So
just a mental breakdown probably caused
exactly
by abuse.
And these stories can influence, you know, well, somebody who may already be ready to snap.
See, a mother commit like infanticide, that's what it's mm-hmm. called, right? It's usually because of some sort of mental break, either from domestic abuse or mm-hmm. or something very traumatic happening to the mother that caused her to either, you know, like target that towards the children or want to end her suffering and take her children with her.
Mm-hmm. And but just to wrap up, though, I thought this was a really interesting story, and that how much it permeates across around the world, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even necessarily want to analyze to a point. I just thought, you know, it was just so, it's still used to, you know, to strike fear in kids. You
right.
know?
Of course. You know, yeah, it's an interesting story. I've definitely heard it before. And yeah, it's like, on the one hand, yeah, you could analyze it. But then on the other hand, it's like, it's so steeped in legend and mythology that it's like, it's more of a ghost story, you know, with bits of realism in it that, you know, is used to, yeah, scare children into behaving and not staying out too late. But also, you know, it's gained a life of its own because of centuries of myths and our own human imagination, to the point where, you know, we even start claiming sightings of it, you know, things like that.
There's lots of movies already made about La Llorona, including the one that let me just mentioned that's on HBO now and stuff. And there was actually another one several decades ago that was made. And so the story just goes back and back and back. And, you know, and even the visage of even I would say the nun in The Conjuring is a version of
La homage. Llorona. Yeah, it's just super interesting. And we've talked about, I think back in season one, I touched on the topic of tulpas, which is, you know, creatures coming to life just out of a group consciousness. You know, basically everybody's thinking about it and enough myths and legend have spread around it that it's kind of come to life out of the energy that we've given it through the centuries, which... That's another sort of cryptid or mythical creature we could talk about another time, and I could talk about at length, but
exactly.
but yeah, it's just, yeah, it's interesting. So I'm glad you picked that topic. I'm really glad I got to learn about it.
So a little bit more of a ghost story than a cryptid this time, but I still felt like, you know, it's still something that people see or claim to see, including going back to the Susan Screamer. There was another story that I read about it. There was a fire watchtower that was out there, and there was a guy that was up there watching for fires, as one is wont to do in a fire watchtower.
Yep.
And he's out there in the middle of the night, he just hears this ungodly screaming, and he, you know, goes out to investigate, and he's like, oh my gosh, what is that? And he looks down, and there's this like black shape beneath him, and it's like, you know, rustling around and, you know, rooting around, and then it screams again. And so he like slams the door and like gets all like, you know, hunkered down and stuff. And then when he looks back down later, it's leaving off into the woods. They think that may have just been a boar, because those can also scream like that. But would that be freaky? That reminded me of that movie, The Village.
Oh, The Village was something.
Yeah. Yeah. M. Night Shyamalan, you're a director.
You're a director. but yeah,
right,
I would definitely consider La Llorona like a good mixture of cryptid and ghost story. You know, I love it. I've heard it before, but not in depth, so I'm glad you talked about it. So
yeah, enjoy.
But
all right, so that's all I got. Anything, do we have any other business to attend to?
I don't believe so. We'll be back again March 1st with another episode.
We sure will.
So this will be a short wait, because we've only got until the 28th this time instead of the 30th or 31st. So you guys will get to wait like 2 or 3 days less than usual.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
Yeah, so we'll be back.
What a treat.
What a treat. We will be back March 1st with another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids. And we just want to say thank you again to everybody who listens to us. And welcome to all our new listeners. We've definitely been seeing that growth. And we're excited to have you here. And once again, thank you to all of our patrons.
Yes, and thank you very much.
We appreciate all of you. You guys, you really, I mean, we love doing this, but we love that you guys love that we do this.
And you guys keep sharing us with your friends. So keep it up. And we really appreciate it. And if you guys have, you know, go head out, go get some merch. Help us out.
Oh, yeah. Go get some merch. We do have a merch store. It's society6.com/cryptipod.
Yeah.
I'll post the link to that when this episode comes out tomorrow. That way you guys can find it. But
yeah, we got a little late Valentine's Day.
We got a cute little merch store. It's got some stuff, some cups and stickers and stuff. It's cool.
It's nice. I even have some. I have one for work.
You know? I have a mug and a t-shirt. And Tessa has a tapestry.
I do.
It's hanging behind her currently.
It is. You guys can't hear it, but it's waving.
It's our season one logo.
Yes.
But so we've rambled a bit. So
we have. I think that's just time to remind everybody to don't forget.
Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptipod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.